Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Summer League is coming to a close. There is just one game left, but Evan Mobley has played his three games that we were kind of promised that he would play. Isaac Okoro has played its two, and I think it's about time for us to get a Summer League wrap-up completed. Joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Yeah, I would argue the second Isaac was done playing, Summer League was over.
You're not mistaken. You're not mistaken. But I thought I should at least mention the fact that it was stated prior to Summer League even starting that Isaac was going to play two, Mobley was going to play three, because some people have insinuated that this is some conspiracy.
Yeah, some well-sourced folks
have claimed that this is some big conspiracy. But no, everything has gone according
to plan. Open your third eye, Justin.
Yeah, well, you know what? It is the outlook for conspiracy theories. So you know what? We will just move on from that. But I do want to talk about Summer League because it has been really interesting. I mean, it is Summer League quality play. There's no denying that. But I've consumed tons of it, even beyond what the Cavs were playing. And I really enjoyed myself. I know basketball hasn't been away for too long, but it was nice to see all these fresh faces. And given the crop of talent that is entering the league with this 2021 draft, I was riveted because I really do feel like the league is getting a serious infusion of talent.
Yeah, I mean, it was you got to see it from a lot of different spots. Jalen Green looks insane. Cade looks about as advertised, I would say.
Yep.
Like the things that kept him from being a surefire pick popped out. But the playmaking and the step back shooting was there. Jason Preston, of course, finally rounded into form today against the Jazz. He's been my most anticipated person to watch. But on a serious note, yeah, I mean the league's in really good shape. I mean, even all the second year players this year look really, really good.
Yeah, you're right. Guys like Isaac Okoro are very clearly too good to be at Summer League, and that was fun to watch. One thing that really surprised me, though, I was planning on starting off with the Cavs guys, but let's just get this out of the way first. One thing that did surprise me looking at the other guys is, like, Jalen Green and Cade being kind of shorter than anticipated really surprised me. Like, I really felt Cade Cunningham was a legitimate 6'8 wing when I watched all the college film. He looked big out there.
6'6 in the NBA.
He's 6'6. He has the same height as Isaac Okoro. Now, big difference for him is he still has that 7'1 wingspan. So, like, he's very clearly a three and plays as such. But I was a little surprised that he was a little shorter than advertised. That was something that really jumped out. I know we are the podcast of Height Watch, so I thought we would stay consistent with our brand.
And how about the Cavs co-opting Height Watch? I mean, If the acquisition wasn't a life changer for us, how about a recognition of Height Watch?
Anytime our bits get recognized, it is a very, very
I don't know. I just don't think anything's going to top Greetings from Sexland making it onto the opening cinematic.
Yeah.
But Height Watch was in its own way. It's even more niche and ridiculous for an official NBA organization to be acknowledging.
You know what? I'm here for it, though, because at the end of the day, sports are supposed to be fun, and not taking ourselves seriously is a very big part of our brand. So anytime we can get the big account to do the same thing is always a good time. But let's get into it, because, folks, Summer League was intriguing as hell from a Cavs perspective. Yes, there wasn't tons of guys that are kind of anticipated to make the big club, but getting to see Evan Mobley on the floor for those three games was really interesting. I thought Lamar Stevens looked really good. Isaac Okoro really stood out. And there's some.
Can we actually start with the marquee player for once?
Yes. Let's start with Mobley this time around. What were some of your thoughts with the next two games that Mobley played?
I think the 2.5 games Mobley played showed us everything that, you know, made him the third overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
In both ways, you know, let's start with the points of improvement, 'cause I do think that's in the interest of kind of being a good evaluator and what he's going to have to go work on the rest of the offseason, which is kind of, I mean, that's what Richard Jefferson said when he kind of schooled the person who, our well-sourced friend, who was indicating that him getting pulled was some conspiracy. It's, no, you get some stuff on tape to work on, then you go work on it. And I think what Mobley is going to realize is his handle against NBA-level athletes is not as good as it needs to be. While he can handle, when that handle is challenged, there's a lot of there's a freeze up that happens, and you know it's not quite as fluid as it is. They tried running a little 4-5 pick and roll in the third game, and I thought that was an interesting thing that if he's gonna be like an elite offensive player, that's gonna have to be part of his game. And running those big pick and rolls, it's not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the strength, we know this. I mean, every shot that comes up short is strength. Every time he gets bumped out of position, strength. And, you know, I do think the jumper is going to be a work in progress. I do not think it's as close as you would hope.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about the stuff that he kind of has to work on?
I was happy that there's a willingness to take shots because I think that's an important thing. I don't think he's ever really going to be abandoned at the three-point line and treated like an Andre Roberson type, because his issue when it comes to the jumper is that it's still there's a long process to launch that thing. It is a slow jump shot, and if you're giving him time, I think he's going to hit it at more regularity. So I think you're still going to see him draw attention in those ways. I thought shutting him down, obviously that was the plan, but I just didn't feel like there was anything more that we could see from him, because the game reps that he's getting, especially with Isaac out, are not close to the reps or what he's going to be asked to do in the NBA. And I actually think when he's practicing with Garland, Sexton, Okoro, and Allen in Vegas, who all of those guys showed up to support the team, to work out with them, I think that's probably more valuable. Those reps are more valuable than playing out there with Kevin Gailey, Stevens, Broderick Thomas, Matt Ryan, and the rest of the boys. But yeah, I think you're right. I think people that are expecting him to come in and be the offensive savior in day one are going to be a little bit disappointed.
He's going to need to be a connector and a finisher right now.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He is going to be a connector, and I think even though he is the franchise talent, the guy that we anticipate building around, in year one, like, you got a lot of other guys that have been drafted high in recent years that have performed well. All the lottery picks seem to be solid picks at the very least. And I think while he needs to add weight, Jordan Zerm actually made this point and stole from my show notes. But I do think that he doesn't necessarily need to add weight for the role that he's going to be asked to play year one. I think him kind of being that high post connecting piece, he's going to draw enough attention there. Like, he's enough of a threat to shoot from the free throw line. He can blow by guys. He does have recognition of where guys are. And I think he's actually going to help generate three-point attempts for the Cavs team. Because, yes, we were short on three-point shooters last season. But I think another issue that we had was that we just
didn't generate them.
We did not generate three-point shots at a high rate. And you look at someone like Ben Simmons, who generates more threes than any player in the league without actually being a three-point shooter. These kind of guys that can make those plays, that can create opportunities, are really valuable. And if Isaac Okoro is more comfortable taking those catch-and-shoot looks, if Garland and Sexton are upping their attempts, I do think that Mobley's presence can really help the Cavs in the three-point department, even if he's not necessarily taking those. And
I want to disagree. Well, actually, I'm not going to disagree about weight. I don't really care about weight. I care about functional strength. And he's going to get knocked off his spots, even on the high post. We watched it happen in summer league, where he'd post up at the nail and get bumped out another 3-4 steps. I think that's really where the weight and the strength is a problem. I also think it's where on finishing when he gets kind of, because, you know, when you're kind of top heavy like he is right now, and you get bumped on the way to the rim, it really derails your path.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I don't think he needs to add strength so he can bang on power forwards in post ups. And while that'd be great, you know, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the way that you get clipped and bumped around and knocked at the NBA level, just moving through traffic.
That's certainly possible. I do think that there's going to be more space to operate, even though the Cavs weren't a great spacing team. Just in the NBA, you're going to have more spacing than you would.
I think people will attack him physically.
It's possible, but there are other outlets for that. And sure. He's such an intelligent player that I do think that if you're overcommitting and you're attacking him physically, he can capitalize on that in some ways. But I do think that your concerns are valid. Like
Let me just say this. I'm not saying that he can't succeed at his current weight. I'm saying that being stronger is better. It just is.
Absolutely.
Like even for the role he's playing, they will be better off as he gets stronger.
Oh,
like we've seen with Anthony Davis, by the way. I think Anthony Davis is the perfect comparison here. Because it's not like Anthony Davis is like yoked now.
No.
He's just a man and has man strength and, you know, has worked on his core, worked on his lower body. And now
Chris Bosh is another great example. Like,
and now he's an actual physical force, you know? Like when AD hits people, they move.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where Mobley is going to need to get.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think the 4-5 pick and roll is going to be something that you'll want to see from him eventually, especially if that pairing with Allen is going to work. I am really excited, though, for kind of those situations where it is the two-man game between Mobley and Garland. Like, if you're going and you're trying to trap Garland, which we saw a lot of last year, where they would really kind of show out, they'd hedge, get double-team him and kind of force him to give the ball up. Having Mobley kind of work downhill in those 4-on-3 situations, I think is going to be a great situation for the Cavs because he makes such smart reads. And the fact that he's got such a big catch radius, he can get it to him. Jared Allen's going to be there in the dunker spot. You're going to have Sexton, Okoro, whoever on the perimeter. You're going to be able to generate some good looks that way. And I think it's going to be a little more difficult for teams to commit to either trapping Garland or Sexton the way that they were able to last year. And I just think he's functionally going to be able to help the Cavs in a lot of ways in his rookie year, even though he is raw. And yes, the weight is going to come up and there's going to be moments where the inexperience comes through and the lack of physical development. But I am really excited for what he can bring to the table. And I do think he's going to make the team better, even if it isn't as significant on the offensive end as some people might hope.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, I kind of expected it this way. I do think, like, if we are like putting a letter grade on his offense at summer league relative to, like, you know, like without grading on a curve, without adjusting for expectations, like a C+.
You know?
Thought he was pretty okay, kind of inefficient, a better playmaker than I thought, worse finisher and shooter
so
than
good.
I thought.
The passing
so,
was
like,
so good.
Sure. Would I love to leave summer league the way maybe Rockets fans are feeling about Jalen Green's offense? Sure, but like Jalen Green's a summer league kind of player, and that's no, you know, pejorative to Green. It's just bucket getters thrive in summer league. Like, we know this.
Yeah.
And that's not Mobley's game. Like, Mobley's going to need to be paired with Darius Garland in the pick and roll and playing with, you know, plus connectors like Larry Nance and
Rubio.
Rubio is going to be great for him. And, like, that's what I'm excited to see on the offensive end. And then on the defensive end, I thought, you know, as advertised, again, both good and bad. Mm-hmm. I thought that the way he blocks shots in a way that you don't see shots get blocked. You know what I mean? It's like the angles at which he gets to the ball. Because, like, when I say that, you're probably thinking him jumping super high and blocking a shot, you know, at the top of its arc or something like that. And that's not it. It's like the way he recovers and just swallows a shot from behind when someone thinks they've generated an angle on him. The way he's able to get deflections on defense, pick up the ball and go run with it. I thought, and then on the bad side, again, like, I think his conditioning was not good enough. And I think that, frankly, like, I've said it, but he's never going to be the defensive anchor of a team until he really learns how to direct traffic and stay engaged the whole possession, every possession.
Yep.
That's what Draymond Green does. That's what Rudy Gobert does. doesn't matter what role you're playing. If you are the anchor of the defense, you got to be talking. You got to be moving. You got to be engaged. You got to be snuffing out actions 2-3 steps ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And that's okay that he's not doing that right now. In fact, it would be pretty unprecedented for any rookie, any 19-year-old to do that. But like, that's what, if I'm the coaches, I'm just going to say like, oh, there you are, straight up and down again, arms at your sides.
Yep.
And like, and I would just be, I would just ride him like on that if I were part of this Cavs coaching staff, where I'm like, this is the way you make us, you add just 10 wins to our regular season by existing.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is one of those situations where I'm really happy that we have a coach that has a strong reputation on the defensive end with JB Bickerstaff. Like, he's going to be pointing these things out. You have a veteran in Larry Nance that's going to be pointing these things out. Jared Allen, I actually thought, I know people made a lot out of Jared Allen when he would get frustrated on the court last year when people would blow defensive assignments. But there were a couple that were pointed out with sex, and there were a couple that were pointed out with different guys. I love that. Like, you should be in people's ears, especially as kind of the quarterback of the defense at the center position.
Keep talking.
Yeah, you have to hold those guys accountable. I mean Tristan was great. Tristan was great at that. He would yell at LeBron every time he blew an assignment. He was one of the few people that actually could speak up to LeBron.
And I mean, you think about like having multiple people like that on a defense. You go think about like the Draymond Iggy lineups in Golden State. Like, you're not getting away with loafing on a possession with those two out there.
Exactly.
And like, ideally, that's where you start building that culture. But Evan's going to have to find his voice, and he's going to have to find his energy level to be that kind of player, because he's not there yet. And frankly, neither is Jarrett. Like, those two are both going to have to really, like, they are on paper just a insanely destructive defensive pairing.
Mm-hmm.
In practice, they're still 23-year-olds and 19-year-olds.
Yeah,
and those guys aren't quite there yet. I don't think it's indicative of anything like that. That there's some ceiling that can't be reached, because as players get older, they just get smarter and better at it.
Yeah,
and I'm really excited to see Jarrett take that next step, and you know, kind of help insulate Mobley, where Mobley can just be more of a physical freak that just kind of, not coast sounds so negative, but like almost like just relies on his physical attributes, kind of like Anthony Davis did early in his career.
Yep.
And still does sometimes. sorry, I didn't want Lakers Nation to hear. But you know, like, escalating your effort level is, and kind of your awareness of what's happening in the geometry of the floor, is like what I'm really excited to see from him.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the nice thing, too, is by all accounts, Mobley is an incredibly intelligent player that obsesses over the film, that's always looking to get better. So I think having those voices around, he's going to absorb that like a sponge. And I'm really excited to see what this team can do on the defensive end. It's going to be a weird pivot for us to become a defensive team, because that is very clearly what's going to happen. But just the space that Mobley is able to cover on the defensive end when he's contesting, like, Jared Allen is someone that can switch on to guards and wings, but we didn't see a ton of that last year because the Cavs were kind of playing that drop coverage, and I anticipate them to continue to do that because Mobley and Allen should be able to contain the offense to keep those guys outside of the paint with how much ground they can cover.
I will say this, the drop defense is probably what they should run if they want to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the lowest challenge defense to play intellectually.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to, ideally, you're staying 2-on-2 and drop coverage, right? You're not involving a third. You're not involving 2-3-4 rotations.
And I also think that teams are giving up the switch a little too willingly. That is definitely something that we saw throughout the playoffs, where teams would switch Brooke Lopez on to Chris Paul with no effort at all. And it's he's going to get his look.
But with that said, I do think if they want to win games, drop coverage is the best. If they want to unlock their defensive ceiling, I would love them to hard hedge. Like, especially with those two bigs, with someone on the back line, where a 4-on-3 offensively with Jared Allen or Evan Mobley protecting the rim is less of a 4-on-3 than most.
Mm-hmm. You're not mistaken.
So, you know, like, I would kind of love them to be chaos generators, especially with those guards who just, frankly, just can't get over screen still. Like, I mean, as much as we love Darius's, we think he's starting to think the game better physically, he just doesn't quite have the ability to get over screens right now. And yeah. Sexton just still runs smack dab into people's chests. And a hard hedge is the highest risk outcome because you can get absolutely cooked. But man, if you actually buy the... If there's two bigs that are capable of still playing big but giving their guards time to get over the screen with a hard hedge, it's those two.
Yeah, they're massive. They are massive. They are mobile, like the quick twitch. They have active hands. Like I think that there's a lot of space to get creative on the defensive end, and I think that's where this team's going to have to hang their hat. Like I definitely still have some offensive concerns. We'll see how the spacing is going, and
it's going to be bad.
Yeah, I'm not anticipating a high offensive ceiling for this team next year, but I do think that the defense can be good. I think it can keep them in a lot of these games and really give them a puncher's chance, which is a lot of what we want to see next season, right? Like we want to see them in games, late in games, and like we've seen some bad offensive teams or teams that have no spacing get by on
New York
defense.
Knicks were a 4 seed.
Yeah, the Knicks are a great example. The Pelicans had worse spacing than the Cavs, and they actually ended up having a really good offense. Like, yeah, there are ways to get creative and to kind of overcome some of your shortcomings. But I definitely think that this team is going to have to hang their head or hang their hat on the defensive end of the floor, and it's going to be on Garland and Sexton more than anybody else to keep this team kind of afloat offensively. Like, I do think that they have smart connectors. I think Mobley facilitates in that role really well. I think Larry Nance is going to bring a lot to the table as someone that can bring continuity, where you have two power forwards with Mobley and Nance that can create for others and kind of run some offense out of the high post. So I think that's a positive. But man, we really need Garland. Like, Garland probably more than anyone else really needs to step up next year, because Sexton was already scoring at a high volume.
Yeah,
I
do not think it is fair to ask more of Sexton as a scorer.
Yeah, Garland needs to be the guy. And I mean, I've been on that train for a while. I really enjoyed Chris Manning's interview with Darius Garland, where Garland said that his confidence is higher than ever and that he was not satisfied with last season at all and feels that he is a much better player. That all got me very excited. But at the end of the day, those guys are going to need to be the driving force for the offense. And then as this group grows together, you're going to see Mobley take on more and more responsibility, because I do think his offensive ceiling is very high. I think his ceiling is tremendously high overall.
He went third overall.
We're going to have to ease him into that. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. That is very, very normal for a rookie. And I think asking him to stick with what he does best while other guys are doing what they do best is probably the best way to go about next season.
Couldn't agree more. Let's move on to Okoro. I think that Okoro was as good as you could ask him to be. I think that reports of a leap might be a little overcooked to me. I think that he looks better. I don't think he looks like a player like... maybe I'm misremembering, so please don't hold me to accountable, Twitter, but I kind of remember like Jaylen Brown's second year of Summer League, when it was like, whoa, this guy got a lot better. Maybe it was him. I can't remember. I think it was him. And like, I think Isaac got better. I think he got better at all the stuff he was pretty good at last season. I think the handle is still shaky. I think the jumper, we'll see. He just didn't shoot enough for us to really know.
Right.
But the finishing and the physicality on drives is much improved.
Yes.
And he is able to, you know, we say it all the time, it doesn't really matter how you generate the angle. It matters that you generate the angle. Mm-hmm. And he seems to have gotten better at generating easier finishing angles as he attacks the hoop. Because last year he was putting up all sorts of English on his jumper, on his layups. Sometimes it worked and it looked really good. Sometimes he missed really, really bad. And I think that he's going to have easier layup attempts this year. Like, and that's why, by the way, I'm going to get on a tangent, but that's why the like Steph versus Kyrie finishing debate on NBA Twitter was so dumb. Because like, who's the more skilled finisher? And like, people who like fundamentally don't understand the conversation are like, well, Steph's numbers at the rim are better. And it's like, yeah, but they're all wide open layups because everyone flew past him from 24 feet away. Like, he might be a more effective finisher, but the more skilled one was never in question, you know? But in the inverse, even though, you know, we fought on Team Kyrie in the Kyrie Steph Wars back in the day, like the inverse, it's still good to generate easy looks. And Isaac seems like he's better at doing those now.
Yeah, I completely agree. And to correct you, Jaylen Brown, his second year at Summer League was actually worse than his first. He averaged 10 points a game on 30% shooting, 25%.
Okay, not him. Not him, then. I forget who it was.
Not Jaylen Brown. So
did he go there 3 years?
I don't think Jaylen went 3 years. I haven't checked his third year. His first year, he did better. But
where do you even check Summer League? Is it Real GM?
Yeah, Real GM. Nicely. Okay. Well played. So once again, Isaac Okoro is still ahead of Jaylen Brown on schedule.
Yes.
that is how I'm going to frame it. And Dylan Windler still had a better age 24 season than Duncan Robinson. But no,
he didn't do both. He didn't do both. Damn it.
Isaac's ability to contribute.
You're only looking at his... no, you're right. Okay, never mind.
I think Isaac has more kind of functional skills. Like, I think the improvements to ball handling, the quicker release on the jump shot is going to fit in really well for what he's being asked to do. I don't think he's going to necessarily be a driving force for them offensively, but I think it's at least positive skills for him to develop. We're probably never going to see him run the point, just realistically speaking, but just being able to run a pick and roll, like if the ball swings to him and he's able to do something with it, I think that's a real positive. So the fact that his passing looked as good as it did, like he made some really good reads. Once again, the spacing was just awful with the Summer League roster, and there wasn't a point guard for these guys to play with. But I'm in on Isaac Okoro. I was not.
I'm more in on him than I was before Summer League.
Yeah,
for sure. I think that if he looked exactly the same, I would have been bummed. I think I would have been like, oh, but now I've seen some growth in some pretty important areas, and that feels really good to me. I mean, and by the way, I did say that I don't think the handle's taken a huge leap, but with that said, like, if you watched the second Summer League game, they were running pick and roll at the top, and it was kind of like a soft trap on him, and he split the defense with that kind of go-ahead dribble,
mm-hmm.
where he kind of pushed the ball out and then went up to it. That was some real craft. I don't think that we saw that kind of craft from him last year at any point. It was very tight and compact always, and I feel like he got kind of loose and extended in a way that he hasn't thus far in his career on that play. So I do think he's working on it. I think he's getting better. I just think, like, if you're looking for, like, a star leap, I don't think that's here.
Oh, I don't think that's coming here.
But that was never our expectations, right? And so seeing
the starting point on his offense was low. Like, let's be honest, it's so low that a leap to like a solid offensive contributor is a significant leap.
I mean, we were
leap.
Earnestly saying, I mean, I was earnestly saying they should bench him for Taurean Prince if they want to win last year.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, so I do think that it's all relative, right? Like, I can see a pretty significant leap coming, and it's fun that there's 2 months more. Like, by all accounts, this guy has not left the gym all summer, and he will continue to do that. So Summer League is really good for kind of having that midway kind of check-in point. This is what I struggled with. This is what worked. And then continuing to work on that and continuing to work on his body.
And remember, this is his first Summer League.
Oh, my God. Yeah, good point. One of the concerns you brought up with his rookie year, or not concerns, but disappointments, was that he wasn't as much of an above-the-rim player. And it looks like he's starting to get above the rim. How are you feeling about that?
I knew you were going to want to talk about this, and I know I'm going to be a buzzkill. I still think when he does, like, so when we're talking about above the rim finishers, we're talking about dudes who in traffic get above the rim.
Mm-hmm.
That's not normally Isaac. Like, when he's got a running start, when he's got 2-3 steps of open air, oh, he's yamming it. And he can do that for sure. I still think the way he prefers to finish is low.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's going up with, he isn't someone who's going to, like, Zach LaVine, where he'll like sky and then like scoop in a layup. I don't really think that's Isaac's game. Yeah. I think Isaac is still going to be a below the rim finisher in that sense. But with that said, feels good to watch him yam on like 3-4 people.
Buddy, those plays were so much fun. And And I like that he's more in control as he was approaching the basket. Totally. Like, that was one of the bigger things with his handle, where there were times where he legitimately just kind of lost the handle as he was going up for a layup.
Or just had bad feet, you know? And, like, your footwork goes a long way, man.
And it's so much better. And he had some really crafty finishes at the rim. I mean, he finished really well at the rim in college. And, well, like, we saw some of that craft with the Cavs, but I just feel like his footwork and the handle, it's functionally so much better than it was last season already. Like, you can just tell that it's making me more optimistic with him, because Okoro was, when we were doing our pre-draft evaluations, he was my number two guy behind Okongwu, but I really just kind of felt that those guys were solid starters. Like, that was kind of my vision for them, that was my expectation. And as an optimist, I mean, when you're really looking at how high I am on Garland, how much I like Allen, how much I like Mobley, like how much I've been in on Sexton since he's won me over, if I was also all the way in on Okoro, like, it would take my unreasonable predictions to a even more unreasonable level. But I'm in on Okoro now. Like, I at least saw the flashes that make me understand why people feel like he has a really high upside. Like, when Dave Dufour came on our podcast and he said that he believes he has the highest ceiling out of anyone on the Cavs before last season, I just couldn't even, like, figure out what the path is. And I get it now. Like, I understand where, how that could potentially come to fruition. I wouldn't bank on it, but I'm starting to get a better feel for what his upside can be in the NBA, and that's a really exciting thing.
Yeah, I mean, the bully ball is the play. That's the move, and he is a physical freak. And here's the thing that we've always said with him. He just has to be okay on offense to be a really, really impactful player.
Yeah.
He was a long way from okay on offense last year, in my opinion. Especially when you consider the shooting woes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with that said, like, I think that he is very much trending in the right direction. I just want to see if that jumper looks as confident as it did in summer league.
Yeah. And
there is nothing to be gleaned.
Honestly, my biggest thing is I want to see, and he wasn't getting these opportunities in summer league, and this was part of what comes with not playing with a point guard. He didn't get catch and shoot looks.
No, he got one or two from Mobley.
He had a lot of catch and shoot opportunities last year where he turned that down or drive or just pass it up.
Bricked it.
Or bricked it, yeah. The fact that his jumper is more compact and it's quicker, I want to see how that works on catch and shoots, because if he can do that even at like 35%, that makes a real big difference. That
35 at volume is important.
Yeah.
Not 35 at wide open and only if he's completely wide open, but like he took some contested threes last year. Like, he was one of the guys who actually got him up. They just didn't go in.
Yep. Especially as the year progressed, when he and Garland were taking more threes, and
it was, and very JB clearly was like, shoot the damn ball, Isaac.
It's very clear that the coaching staff was emphasizing that. So those are all positives. Like, that is things that are at least trending in the right direction. But again, with Isaac, the same as with Mobley, I just really want to see it with everyone else, because how they function within the context of the rest of the young core is the most important thing. Were there any other guys that stood out to you as we look at the summer league roster?
Yeah, Broderick really he had a rough go. that was disappointing. I wanted to see him play well. We already touched on Lamar in the last pod, so I don't think we need to talk about Lamar too much. But one player I would like to talk about is Trayvon Blewett, who is, I want to say he's like 26 now. He's a little bit older. Been around for a while. I thought he was going to have a spot in the league out of college.
Well, especially how well he played in his first summer league in 2018. Like, he had multiple 23, 26 point games for the Pelicans.
I like his game. He is someone who he had a bad year in summer league last year. I mean, he might have been hurt. He shot like 26% from
2 years ago.
I'm sorry, G League. That's what I meant.
Oh, gotcha.
In the actual, his last proper G League season, like, he was, you know, 15 points on 6 3-point attempts a game and making two or three. And like, if you were to go with a kind of an end of roster spot. And yeah, if I was picking between Broderick Thomas and Blewett, I would probably go with Blewett right now.
In terms of
what they add to the roster. And like, I know that like half of our listeners have stopped listening as we talk about the 12th and 13th men on the roster, but like, it does matter. Like, after last season, how many minutes went to these guys? It matters more than you think it does. And like, I think an older guy, a guy with a proven jump shooter.
He's a 6'6 shooter. You don't have to really spend a lot of time selling it. Like it's what
I like
we
him.
Need. It's what
and
we need more than
so
that.
So bad on defense.
No, and we can kind of afford to cover for guys defensively at this point. Like this is not supposed to be a perfect roster. We are not talking about a title contender. We are talking about a team that maybe can compete for a play-in spot. Like that is the goal for this roster. So bringing in Blewett rather than Broderick Thomas, I think that's kind of the way that I would lean if I was making that decision. Like
the age, I think, is going to hurt him just being 26. You know, I mean, I think Kobe's valued these younger guys that, you know, he can lock up on a 3-year, mostly non-guaranteed deal. But like if I'm just trying to win games and I'm picking between those two guys, because Broderick is unguaranteed reported, right?
I believe so. Yes.
I would go with Blewett. I think he showed so much in terms of being a play finisher, being someone who could shoot without a conscience. Like just thinking about what this team needs, you can see a world in which this guy comes in and actually like. So like anyone with that roster slot, you're really like, what if they somehow make it? You know, like that's kind of the hope, is like maybe something happens and something clicks with just in the right situation, right time, right place, and there's someone we can kind of build a career for. And I see the path for that for Blewett on this team.
Being perfectly honest, I'd probably rather give a two-way spot to Matt Ryan than Broderick Thomas at this point, like a 6'7 shooter. Like,
yeah, I just don't
see any functional need. I don't see any functional need for Broderick. And like that's harsh. I thought that he gave them some good minutes last season.
He did.
But at the end of the day, like you have Garland, Sexton, Rubio, they're taking up a lot of those guard minutes. Maybe
Dodson, I think, is still...
I was going to say, I'd probably rather give the minutes to Dotson than Broderick Thomas. Like, let's be honest.
For sure.
Especially if Thomas is being shot happy the way that he was in summer league. Yeah,
you know,
I would rather.
Probably going to get some minutes of the two, depending on what they do at the wing.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, between Garland, Sexton, and Rubio, if Sexton is getting 32 minutes each and Rubio's getting 25 off the bench, that leaves seven guard minutes for someone else. Like there's not a lot of minutes there, and who knows, like you might sign a third point guard as well. You might take a shot on someone like Frank Ntilikina. Like I would rather go that route and give that two-way spot to someone like Matt Ryan or Blewett. Like I think those guys, just being big wing shooters, is exactly what they need. That you can plug and play those guys. I would still anticipate the Cavs trying to add another wing before the season starts. But if you're giving one of those spots to one of these guys that's on the summer league team, I'd probably lean that way over Broderick Thomas. The other guy that deserves at least a little bit of credit, I think, is Fiondu Cabangeli. I thought he was pretty solid defensively. Don't mind him as a depth piece. Our buddy Drew from the Discord likes to play good or Canadian with me, and I'd probably say Canadian more than good when it comes to Cabangeli, but I don't mind what he brings to the table.
I don't think he should be the team's backup five, though. I would love to see Hartenstein back.
I mean, at this point, isn't the backup five Kevin Love?
Yeah. But I think we're just all a little skeptical about that until we see him on the court. So I don't know. I feel like I don't think Cabangeli should be your breaking case of Kevin Love injury or buyout plan.
Oh,
at the backup,
I mean,
five.
Even at this point, like.
I think there's better guys on the free agency market.
You've got Allen, you got Mobley, you got Larry, you got Kevin Love, you've got Dean Wade.
That's a good point.
That is
probably
five
wouldn't
bigs.
Need to play anyway.
That is five bigs that I would play over. Like,
which is really a case for just not rostering him. Like if it like.
Well, Cabangeli, like you keep him as a 15th man and a non guaranteed contract,
yeah,
right?
That's
like,
fine.
That's what he's currently on reportedly. So I would assume that you keep him around.
These are tough decisions, though, man. Because like Cabangeli was good for them last year, and I thought he acquitted himself really well in summer league. It's just, you know, like the talent level isn't all the way there. You know,
yeah.
For where you kind of need it to be, if you need him to play minutes. But you know that, like, gosh, if the guy just gets 10% better at the jumper, he's an NBA player.
Yeah. No kidding.
Isn't that so crazy that like the margins are so thin?
They really are.
If he adds just like a degree of arc on that jumper, it just looks better and goes in more, and he has a place as a stretchy big.
I mean, it's at least he's got touch, right? Like, in theory, that could come along. And
no, it's
like,
not implausible.
He's someone, like, it's not like he's been in the league for a long time. He was literally the pick after Windler, or I think the pick before Windler. He was one pick away from Windler either way. So that's some context there when it comes to Cavangeli. The final thing I want to touch on before we wrap this up, Carter, I need your thoughts on what Jared Allen said about the team's window. Because I saw the outrage over him saying in 2-3 years we could be a 5 seed, and people said that was the most depressing thing that they have ever heard from around the Cavs. And I thought we were all on the same page. I thought that this year you're competing for a play-in spot.
Next year you're hoping you're at the end of the playoffs.
2 years would be the following year. So if you're a 5 seed in 2022, 2023, that would be great. Honestly, with how good the East is getting, the following season, that would be great. Like, if you went from play-in to 7 seed to 5 seed, that is solid growth for a roster that would still have a core all under 25 years old.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Nam and I in the DMs said it just right. You know, it's just not what you normally hear a player say.
I like honesty, man.
But like, I was like, yeah, that sounds good. But I knew people were going to latch on that the second they heard it. You know, people are hungry. I think there's going to be people. I think that if the Cavs have the 9th best record in the East next year, there will be a vocal contingent of Cavs people that are grumpy about it.
Oh yeah, right.
So it's like, so if you're not,
and I'm not even caring
people,
about that. I'm just saying from a realistic standpoint, like.
So what I'm saying is, like, those people are going to be pretty grumpy unless they're like a winning team.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I guess if that's, it's not an unreasonable bar to be happy with your team, you know, for them to win games,
yeah,
win more than they lose. But like, it's like in terms of kind of where they are, I didn't think anything Allen said was unreasonable.
Yeah, I mean, the benefit of the play-in is it gives, like, a 9 or 10 finish in the past would be really depressing. But now it actually gives, like, a goal for a team that's looking to build around a young core. Like, if they got the 9th seed, yeah, you've got 2 games to potentially make the playoffs like Memphis did. They wouldn't have made the playoffs in a regular circumstance. But, hey, now you get almost playoff games. And that would be a really great experience. And if the following year you're a 5 seed, I would be thrilled. Like, that's optimistic even by my standards. But like, if that's the kind of thing that would make you really depressed, you might want to just little less emotional investment in the team, because you got to keep the expectations realistic. I just get excited for realistic expectations.
Yeah, all I care about is the team getting better every year. That's all I've ever cared about. I think that's why I could be accused of being overly optimistic on this rebuild, because I think the team's gotten better every year.
Mm-hmm.
I do think this is the year where you hope for a more appreciable leap in terms of the outlook of the team, especially with the talent infusion of Evan Mobley.
Yeah.
But, you know, to each their own. I mean, I'm not going to tell people how to fan, but, I mean, if you had a reaction to that story, like, I don't know, man. It's a guy who just signed a long-term deal. He's trying to explain why he's hyped about it.
And also, it's the people that sit there and they complain that athletes give these canned answers and boring answers and they're not honest. Well, I appreciate honesty, man. Like, don't jump down players' throats when they do give you some honesty. If in 2 years you're a 5 seed, we're laughing. I'm thrilled with that.
Well, as we've always said 1,000 times over, all the jokes go away if the team starts winning.
Yep.
Like, in a lot of ways,
and
the
frankly,
ball is
the drama too. Like, things get easier when you win.
Well,
like,
maybe
things
not
get
for the Cavs. But
this time, it would be without LeBron. So there's more of a likelihood that it would be drama free.
But with that said, like, in a weird way, like, it's all, the ball is in the org's court. You know, like, if they win 10 more games than anyone expects them to next year, that'll shut people up.
Yep,
and it's kind of nice to know that it's almost that simple.
I cannot wait to get into kind of
seeing how we got to wait 2 months.
I hate that, but I can't wait to start like breaking down how they stack up with other teams in the East, because it is going to be a really interesting discussion. There's a lot of teams that probably look a little better on paper, but I do think that there's interesting opportunities for them. I really, really, really like that the whole young core was in Vegas working out together. I think that's so important for developing chemistry, continuity. Like, that needs to be their edge, especially with a young team. So we'll be getting into that on future podcasts, but for today, I think we can wrap it up here. I want to thank all our listeners so much for all your support. We really do appreciate it. If you guys want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.